The question was asked, when the Torah teaches us that man was formed from earth, what is the Torah teaching us? What's the message? So we will discuss an idea, and I just want to make a disclaimer that these are verses about creation, which we are taught are Maaseh Bereishit, our Kabbalistic verses, and the true understanding of these verses only comes after you've learned the whole Torah again and again and again, and you've mastered the written tradition and the oral tradition and everything. Then you start understanding what these verses say. Nonetheless, there are certain, call them sparks of wisdom, that we might be able to gain from the story. So I want to begin with a question my fifth grade Rebbe asked us. We were in fifth grade, and the Rebbe asked us, what makes man special? In what way are you better than an animal? This was a question our fifth grade teacher asked us. And then he brought in a video. And the video showed the skills of animals. The point of the video was to describe, to compare man and animal. So the video begins and asks, what makes man special? Is it because he's a good boxer? And you see Muhammad Ali, knockout punch, 1-2. And then they showed you, I think it was a kangaroo, I don't remember which animal, that can box much quicker and much more forcefully and not get tired more so than man. And then said, okay, so man is a great builder. So it showed you the great technology that beavers use to build dams, that bees use to build hives, and there's a great wisdom in the shape, the octagon, the shape of the hive that the bee uses. And the bird that builds its nest, there's tremendous brilliance and engineering, and nests can be built to be so strong. So is it man's engineering skills? There are many, many skills that animals have that man has a hard time replicating. And it went skill by skill by skill, and then he paused the video. And he said, so what makes man special? And then it was a snow day, and he never finished the video. So for years, I walked around with that question, what makes man special? Because he never showed us the end of the video. He wanted us to ponder it to the next day, but the next day was a snow day. So now we come back to the question, what makes man special? The Torah describes all of creation leading up to man. There's the creation of the animals, and then finally, there's the creation of man. And in the description of man, the description is not about his skills. It's not about his capacity to do things. It's his intellect. It's about the soul that's blown into him. Vayipach be'apav nishmat chayim. Hashem placed within man a soul of life. This is a very important concept. As Rambam writes, we cannot eat human beings. And it's not because the human being is a non-kosher animal. It's not because we don't chew our cud or have split hoofs. That's not the reason you don't eat humans.
We're technically kosher?
No. We're not animals. Meaning the idea, that's one of the dangers of evolution. The idea that man and animal, the only difference between them is levels of sophistication, takes away the integral difference that we view in man. Rambam, in his introduction to Pirkei Avot, wrote 8 chapters introducing Pirkei Avot. Now, Pirkei Avot is a tractate that's not about laws. It's about how do you become a better human being? How do you acquire good traits? What traits should you aspire to acquire? How should you be behaving? So it's not a series of laws like other tractates, but rather it's a focus on developing the personality. So Rambam wrote 8 chapters introducing this book, and they got the nickname Shmona Prakim, the 8 chapters. Everyone knows Shmona Prakim is Rambam's famous work introducing Pirkei Avot. So in that work, Rambam dissects a few concepts. One concept he discusses is free will. He discusses the idea that in Judaism we don't believe in predetermination. We do not believe that man is forced to behave a certain way. We believe in predisposition. It could be that one man is born and he is more predisposed to being angry. He is more predisposed to being generous. He is more predisposed to being humbler, kind. We definitely see differences. We don't have the same predispositions, but we are not predetermined. We have free will. The whole point of the Torah and Tractate Pirkei Avot is about my ability to develop. I am not bound to be one way or another. One of the grave dangers of what they try to show people today, that you were born this way, so therefore you have to be this type of person. You have to have these types of attractions or these types of actions. It's not true. It takes away the responsibility from man. One of the key tenets of Jewish thought is that man has free will, and we have the responsibility to take control of our thoughts.
Are monkeys kosher, by the way?
No.
No.
I want to take a small detour, okay? I had an opportunity recently to talk to a fantastic psychologist by the name of Rabbi Dr. Twersky. And this is, I think, the son of the Rabbi Dr. Twersky, the famous one from Milwaukee, currently in Muncie. And he said the following concept. He said, you see a person who gets up in the morning and he has a hard time getting up on time because at night he goes to the bar and he goes to party and he's doing all kinds of things, and then in the morning he has a hard time holding a job and he keeps going from job to job. And he has a hard time building a family. And he has a hard time living a responsible life. And you ask him, why are you doing this? And he says, that's the way I am. Well, the answer to that we learn in the very beginning of the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch says, Yitgaber ka'ari, he should strengthen himself like a lion, la'amod baboker la'avodat bore'o, to stand up in the morning for the service of his Creator. A person has to get up like a lion. Says the Mishnah Berura, Ki lechach nivra ha'adam. That's why man was creator. That's why man was created. I have a purpose here. And then the Mishnah Berura says, Ve'avim yashienu yitzro b'choref. And even if one's desire, his inclination, tries to convince him in the winter and says, how are you going to get up? It's so cold outside. And it's nice and comfortable under the blanket. Or in the summer, he says, how are you going to get up? It's so early. The night was so short. So a person has to overcome him and not listen to him. The Mishnah Berura, in his opening sentence on the Shulchan Aruch, says Rav Twersky, gave us one of the most phenomenal tools in dealing with ourselves. Do I say that the weakness, well, that's who I am? Or do I say, no, there's the Yetzer Hara out there. I am a wonderful person. I have something called the Yetzer Hara, that inclination, that Jiminy Cricket, the opposite of Jiminy Cricket, that says to me, go do something else. Leave me alone. I want to do what's right. I want to be a good person. I'm not listening to you. I have important things to do today. So that idea that I don't take as my identity that weakness, I say, that's not me. That is very empowering. Coming back to here. So that's one concept that Rambam discusses in the 8 chapters. Free will. Another concept, which is a key concept that Rambam discusses there, is the breakdown of the human soul. And Rambam lays down the following tenet. He says, do not think that a human being that eats is the equivalent of an animal that eats. You know, there were philosophers, Aristotle, Plato, there were philosophers that said, when I eat, now I am feeding the animal in me. So then when they'd come to eat, they'd eat like an animal. When they'd come to do other animalistic things, they'd do them like an animal, because they said, this is the animal in me. Says Rambam, that's an integral difference between us and them. Jewish philosophy says, the human soul is different because the soul, says the Rambam, has 5 components. And part of them seems synonymous with animal. We have a heart, and they have a heart. We pump blood, they pump blood. We have feelings, they have feelings. We have desires, they have desires. We eat, they eat. We breathe, they breathe. Says Rambam, but my breathing is different than his breathing. Not anatomically. But the source of life, the battery that makes my body function. What is life? It's the soul. And the soul is integrally different, says the Rambam. If the soul has a component that makes it godly in a human, because a human soul was given something different than the animal, then when the human being sits down to eat, his eating is different. It better be different because he has the capacity to make it different. When I sit down to eat, it's not the animal in me that's eating, it's my whole soul that's eating. Yes, my body needs to eat, but I am reflecting the spiritual, the godly part of me in the animalistic things I do as well. So I'm not going to sit down and devour the meal. You know, Hawkins, in his he emulates Plato in this. That's what they wrote about him. Once upon a time, many years ago, I used to read Time magazine, before some of you were born. We're talking about 3 decades ago. So back then, they wrote, they had an article on Hawkins and the black hole. He had just come out with his book. So they wrote about him. And one of the things they wrote about him, Stephen Hawking, one of the things they wrote about him was that he is a very filthy person. That when he was betting another philosopher about whether there are black holes or not, their bet was whoever wins would buy the other one a subscription to a very filthy magazine for a whole year. That was the bet. And they said that when he sat down, when he would sit down at the school cafeteria to eat, it wasn't only about his disability and his ability to eat in a humane way or not. The way he treated the waiters was like dirt. Because he said, now I'm an animal. He said, when I eat, I'm being an animal. And he said he emulates Plato in that. So we say, not that way. We say there's no moment in life where I may be an animal. Everything I do should be a reflection of the fact that I'm a godly being. Says the Rambam, the human soul, with its 4 components that seem identical to the animal's components, are not. Because we have the 5th component. We have the godly component to the soul. And that has to affect all other components of our life. So, people who study evolution will tell you that when you get upset at someone, we have a tendency to give a slight smile. And this goes back to our evolutionary tendency to reveal our fangs because we're ready to bite their neck. That's
the way people say that?
That's what evolution says. That the reason when you get angry, you give a slight smile, that's it's not only a sarcastic smile, you have a tendency to reveal these teeth because once upon a time you had fangs, and your thought, your evolutionary tendency is to think about biting his throat. We don't say that. We say, I'm different. I'm not a sophisticated animal. Going back to the Rambam, I'm not kosher because I don't have split hoofs. I'm not kosher because I'm a human. Now, if you think about it, I always gave the example of people who are mentally challenged. Why do we let them live? Why don't we eat them? And why don't you eat them? The idea is I see God in him. I don't say, well, he has no understanding, he has no knowledge, so let's just kill him, let him die, let's eat him for lunch. No, that's a representation of God, just like I am. What makes me godly is not my behavior. There are moments where my behavior is an embarrassment to me. But I have the potential. I was given a different soul. And then recently, I had the opportunity to see people as they age. And it dawned on me, it was very striking for me in the moments I saw it, that as you see people reaching their last moments in life, most people lose the genteel, lose the class, lose the things that make you feel like man is different than animal. They start being almost like a 2-year-old. People reach an age where suddenly they can't control their bowel movements. People reach an age where they can't control, they have very little control in their life, even if they're all there mentally. And then usually as people age, they can't stay all there mentally. So then you come to visit a person and you see an old man who you remember when he was smart and with it and he was amazing. And what you see is a creature in diapers that cannot feed itself, that cannot say an intelligent sentence, And what do you, how do you view that creature? Do you say, that's an amazing human being? That's godliness standing before me? I used to board in an apartment complex where the man above me, he was also renting an apartment, had Alzheimer's. And he would get up in the morning and look in the mirror and he'd ask, who is that? And he'd look at his wife and say, who are you? Why are you in this house with me? He didn't, he'd get scared. He'd walk and look in the mirror and get scared. Who is that person there? So this was a man who was a big rabbi once upon a time. And Alzheimer's had brought him to a state where he didn't understand the world he was living in. So we honored him tremendously. We gave him tremendous honor because we knew who he was. So am I honoring history? Or am I saying, no, that's who he still is? I can't see that part of him right now. He can't show that part of him, but there's godliness there. This approach is a critical approach on so many levels in our approach to our fellow human being and to ourselves. The value we give life. So when the Torah says you are dust, I think what the Torah is saying is, on one level, the Torah is saying, man was formed from dust. Because what's important about man is not the components. It's not the chemical components. When I was doing biology 101, they told us that if you broke down a human being to their chemical parts, then he would be worth about $89. They said, break down a human being to their components, it's $89.
That's more than you would think.
Okay.
Right?
Optimist. Way to go.
I thought that even if I grow my hair and I just sell that as a wig, that would be worth $2,000. That was a joke. coming back to our... So maybe the Torah is stressing when it says man is earth and dust, the Torah is telling us our value doesn't stem from our physical components. The formation of man from dust is to stress vayipach ba'apav nishmat chayim, that God blew into that dust part of God, just as when we blow out, we're blowing air that's within us. There's godliness in man. The value of man is not about his sophistication. In his sophistication, he is but dust. It's not about his chemical components. It's about the godliness that was placed within him. Vayipach ba'apav nishmat chayim. The verse shows you he wasn't worth anything beforehand. He was dust that was put together. And then God gave him the capacity. God gave him something special. Yes?
I have just a short question to show because of
the... So wait, let's. I think he has a question on this topic. Yes?
Okay. This may be sort of, but... when we say in Tachanun, Zachor, Kefar,
Nachanun,
what is that... What are we essentially saying when we're praying to Hashem?
I think when we're saying Zachor Ke'afar Anachnu, it's a great question. Thank you for asking it. I want to answer that with something I was told. But I want to tell you who told it to me, just so you appreciate the line. Approximately 25 years ago, I had the good fortune of being in a room, being in an apartment in a yeshiva with a very big Talmud Chacham. And this person would eat his dinner learning. And he'd go to bed with a book in his hand. And I thought he was my age. I was 19, 20. And he was learning in the yeshiva, and when I walked in, I asked him, I saw the place next to him was empty. I said, what's your name? He said, Avi. So I said, okay, hi, Avi. My name's Netanel. Is the place next to you available? He said, yes. I didn't know that he was the head of the base medrash, and that's why no one dared sit next to him. So I spent the next month telling him Avi, calling him Avi, right? I was like in my own world, right? I was a newcomer to the base medrash. I didn't understand the place next to him was available. I asked. He said, sure, you could sit. I sat right next to him. And of course, I came and I asked him questions all the time. So, Avi, right? So, I can tell you a lot of stories about him. I had the good fortune of sharing his shas with him. And I saw that. All the Talmud, right? The whole Talmud, all the volumes of Talmud, So he had one that he used, and he let me use it, because I thought he was like one of the guys. He was very young looking, so I didn't catch on that he had kids my age. So I asked him if I could use his Gemara. I said, yeah, so we'd share. And by sharing it with him, I got to see how he'd finish a volume like this every week. You know, he's gone through the Shas, and then again, and then again. And that's so here you have a person who would leave his house on Sunday, learn Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, go home, be with his wife and kids Tuesday night, come back Wednesday, Thursday, and then Thursday night, go back home, be with his family Friday Shabbos, and then go back again. And this is what he did for many, many years. Now, he's a very dedicated father, and he was also, he was a very, very, very kind person. He had an inheritance of, I don't know how many millions from his father, and he slept on a bed that your guy's bed is better than his. He learned on a table and a chair that he took from the local elementary school when they threw it out. So he had a simple chair and table, you know, like a elementary school chair and table and a little lamp. And that's, he didn't need anything else. I once saw his shirt. I said, that's such a cool shirt. It's got all these checkers. When I teach the kids about the Kohen Gadol's shirt, that's a perfect example to give them. Where do you buy such a shirt? So he said to me, I don't know. I said, what do you mean? Where'd you buy it? He said, I don't know. It was 30 years ago. So he's still wearing the same shirt. Now the guy has millions, like $20-30 million. He used it for charity. He didn't, you know, on himself, he wore the same old shirts. He slept on a bed. I'm telling you, when he was away, he let me sometimes use his bed. He had a different room, and there were benefits to that room. I'm telling you, your bed at Machon Meir is better than the bed he slept on. When he'd leave his house and come, what?
So how would you want to sleep?
Because his room had air conditioning. The other room didn't. His room was smaller, so it had better air conditioning. But anyways, coming back to, so one time, I was discussing with him a Gemara about whether man has evil inclinations or not. So he stops me and he says, we're all made of the same mud. I said, what do you mean? He said, we're all made of the same mud. We're all humans. We have humanistic desires. We have humanistic tendencies. And that's part of who we are. And it shocked me. Here I see a man who I value so much. And I see him living a life that's so pure. And he says to me about himself, like he and I are equal, right? We are all made of the same mud. And I look at him and, how could you say you're made of mud, right? But he was telling me something. He was telling me, we're not just soul. We're not just spiritual. There's an element that we're made of something physical, and that drives within us an attraction to the physical. When we say tachanun, so whenever I read that line, I think back to what he said. Zachor ki afar anachnu. I think what we're saying is, remember, Ribon Shel Olam, I am made of mud. That means I'm made of something physical. I have attractions to the physical. I have weaknesses that stem from that attraction. Remember, I'm a mere mortal. I know you put a little bit of you in me, but I'm still made of mud. I still have that weakness. I think that's the stress in Zachor ki afar anachnu. Yes, your question was on a different point, right?
No, it was like because you said like a human being has to wake up like a lion.
Yes.
And one friend told me once.